Fascinating figure, and is really ranks right up there with Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin and all the people that we call the founding fathers. William Penn is foundational to our nation's history.
Well,
so
I had no clue.
Well,
I didn't even
know. Let me do a little Q&A here. True or false? To test your knowledge of William Penn.
All right.
True or false? William Penn is the face on Quaker Oats.
I believe that would be false.
Oh, doggone it, you're right. But a lot of people think that the face on Quaker Oats is William Penn, but it's not.
It's an old Quaker guy.
It's an old Quaker guy, yeah. But it's not William Penn.
Okay.
So he might have looked like that in old age, but that was not William Penn. True or false, William Penn lived in Pennsylvania.
Well, I believe that he spent part of his life there.
Well, actually, he never lived there.
Is that right?
He visited there two times, and they were two visits, and he had a home there, but he never really ever lived there. He spent the majority of his time over in England.
In England.
All right.
Well, okay.
True or false? The Liberty Bell in Philadelphia was made to commemorate the signing of the Constitution.
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I think that's false. I forget what it was, but it's a document that I don't know.
The Liberty Bell was cast to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Constitution that William Penn wrote for Pennsylvania, and so it was adopted in, of course, into the American pantheon of icons for us, and because it was part of Philadelphia, which was where the Constitution was drawn up, but it was actually made to commemorate the freedoms and the liberties that were given to citizens of the colony of Pennsylvania back in the colonial era.
How about that?
And finally, William Penn, true or false, was opposed to slavery.
I would think so.
Well, that is false.
Oh.
William Penn actually owned slaves. And for all of the brilliance he had in liberty and freedom, it was one of those blind spots that he and many other Quakers had in the early days of the colony of Pennsylvania. And William Penn actually was a slave owner. So we all have those contradictions in our life, don't we?
And so
William Penn was kind of one of those, but a very, very interesting character. Let me just set the stage a little bit and tell you about Penn. He was actually a son of wealth and privilege. His father, William Penn Sr., was a very popular admiral in the British Navy, worked for Oliver Cromwell, worked for the Stuart Kings, very well placed in society, very well moneyed. Penn's mother also came from a very well-to-do family, had a loving home, had all the privileges that any man of his era could ever possibly have. You know, nice home, loving parents. As much money was, you know, of no importance whatsoever because they had so much of it. He was educated at Oxford, later in France, and then finally studied law in the most prestigious law school of London.
I say,
you know. Penn actually did appreciate the resources that he had. You know, he wasn't one of those people that, oh, well, you know, that's the way it is. He actually had an appreciation for what he possessed in his family. But one of the things that happened very early on in his life was that he had a very, very tender conscience and was very much open to spiritual things. His parents, of course, being very plugged into society, were members of the Church of England.
Okay.
And Penn, though, was kind of left on his own when it came to spiritual matters. And very early in his life, like 12 years old, he went to go hear a speaker from a not well-known group called the Quakers, or the Society of the Friends. And Penn was very, very much touched by this and felt that he had really encountered truth. And that stuck with him all through college. If you can believe this, during his college years, he actually got expelled from college a couple times over not going to the chapels but going to Quaker meetings. Now, how many parents listening today are their kid to be in trouble at college over going to prayer meetings that aren't authorized, as opposed to the many other unauthorized and illicit activities that happen on college campuses? But Penn, even in college, was very much, looking at being a part of this group. It resonated with him, And anyway, in England, if you were in a group of Christians that did not happen to be Church of England, this was a very precarious
time.
Very precarious position to be in, because, of course, the King of England, after Henry VIII, was the defender of the faith and the head of the Church of England. And so if you were outside of that fold, so to speak, you ended up actually kind of being in a position of being part of a seditious group. You know, you were looked at as kind of threatening the unity of the kingdom, threatening the crown and all that. And so these groups were very much looked at askance. Let me say something, too, if you're not familiar with what the Quakers were all about. Now, obviously, I'm going to overly simplify this. There's all sorts of stripes of Quakers. But briefly, Quakers are a Christian group that stress immediate revelation from the Holy Spirit, as opposed to how most mainstream Christians, I'm sure your church, I know my church is the same, we stress what we call mediate revelation. In other words, we find that we believe and hold to that our revelation comes from the Word of God. And so that God has inspired the Word, and from that we hear the voice of God speaking into our lives. But the Quakers, while they did read the Bible and did value it, they continued to believe that God gave immediate revelation to individuals.
Cool.
They called this the inner light. And this was authoritative for them, just as the Word of God would be authoritative to us. So they also had some other aspects. They had the witness of simplicity and good works, and they had what they called the witness of peace, which included justice and nonviolence, and many other things. But this is a oversimplification, if you will, just to give people a picture of what being a Quaker was about. Well, Penn becomes more and more and more involved with the Quakers, much to the chagrin of his parents, and they actually end up disowning him a while because of, you know, just the shame that's being brought. I mean, here they are, these highly placed people in society, and their son's off with this dissident Christian group, you know. And Penn actually realizes he's a brilliant man, well-educated, and he realizes there's really not much Quaker literature, and so he kind of nominates himself to begin writing some devotional literature, and he writes this one book that actually is considered really a very poor book, poorly researched and ill-informed, anyway, it actually attacked the doctrine of the Trinity. And for that, the King of England had him thrown in the Tower of London. And the Tower of London, okay, that's a very distinguished jail to end up in London, if you will. If you've ever visited London, that's usually a stop. You know, that's where the Beefeaters are, where all the kings have been killed and executed. And anyway, very distinguished place to be thrown in jail if you have to be in jail in England. But while he's in the Tower of London, Penn writes another book, or he pens another book, if you will, called No Cross, No Crown. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Once again, a real devotional classic, still in print today. And anyway, Penn never recants, actually, from any of his writings. He says, I have the right to believe and think as I please, even though that was, of course, not the environment that that he was living in. And Penn works tirelessly through his 20s, in his 30s, basically helping Quakers that were in trouble with the law. And him himself being a lawyer, is fighting for religious liberty in England. And one of the things,
what time are we talking about?
About the late 1600s, okay. Early 1700s.
All right.
Here. Interesting thing, the right of trial by jury, which is something that is very much part of our national tradition here in America, that actually was secured for the citizens of England through legal action that William Penn initiated. I know. I'm telling you. You know, it's just one of those little-known things. But he went and spent a lot of time himself in jail, in and out of jail for being a Quaker, but also tirelessly worked for the liberty and freedom of many Quaker leaders. And he becomes known in England as a spokesman for religious liberty, and was in demand as a speaker. When he would ever give a speech, thousands of people would come to hear William Penn. And eventually, what happens is he goes on a tour of Europe to see how other Quaker groups are faring in other countries, and he goes over to Holland. And one of the things, as he meets with Quakers over in Holland, that he notes is the fact that they had all sorts of different Protestant groups that were persecuted in the other countries of Europe, and they had persecuted Jews living in Holland, and everybody was living side by side and were getting along great. And he made note that Holland had, amongst many other things, a philosophy of what they called peaceful cooperation. And that was a national – well, it still is a national value to this day in Holland.
Uh-huh.
Although they have a tendency to be so tolerant, they've lacked a lot of moral parameters there now. But at this particular point in time, this peaceful cooperation really cast a vision in the mind of William Penn. And when he went back to England, he basically realized that, you know, I don't think we're going to see a resolution of this Quaker problem in my country in my lifetime. And he knew the king. Being in this highly placed family, he knew the king of England, King Charles II.
He's out of jail now.
He's out, obviously, yeah. This is one of the times he is out of jail. And he goes to the king and he asks him if he could buy half of New Jersey, basically what we call Western New Jersey. And he wants to start a colony for Quakers.
And what an enterprising thought.
Exactly. He gets this idea, I'll just buy the land. And from the king, and then I'll start this colony. And King Charles II is extremely amenable to this idea. For one thing, he knows he's going to be able to get rid of a lot of Quakers if he sells this land to Penn. But also, he owed William Penn's late father a huge sum of money that William Penn's father had loaned the crown to finance one of their wars. And so he says, tell you what, not only will I give you this land you want to buy, but I'll give you this, which was basically the territory of modern-day Pennsylvania, if you want to write off the debt that I owe your father. And Penn's very amenable to that. As a matter of fact, King Charles II is the one who actually named Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania means Penn's Woods. That's yes. What it means. And it was named after William Penn's late father in honor of his father. And so the king only said, you know, when I give you this land and everything, I'm going to expect every year that you give me 2 beaver pelts and 1/5 of all the gold that you find in Pennsylvania. Now, to my knowledge, I don't think Pennsylvania is much of a gold state. I don't even know how many beavers, actually.
But not gold.
Yeah, but Penn had to come up with 2 beaver pelts anyway every year as a tribute to the king. You know,
okay.
I don't know what they did with beaver pelts, but apparently it was something the king wanted to have 2 of every single year. And so, anyway, this colony of Pennsylvania is given to William Penn. He is actually the proprietor of it, and he's the hereditary proprietor of this. It literally belonged to him and his descendants.
Wow.
And Penn becomes the governor. And Pat, I could talk for hours on, you know, some of the things, some of the ideas Penn had, but you know, he basically called Pennsylvania a holy experiment. And what his holy experiment was he had a vision. England was ruled by the divine right of kings. In other words, they believed that God actually gave the king of England his right to be the king.
Uh-huh.
And Penn believed in the divine right of government. And that was his vision that he had for Pennsylvania. And this was his holy experiment. He believed in his heart of hearts that human beings are the most happiest when they live in an environment where they have freedom of conscience to choose to worship God in the way that they see fit, you know, the way they see at best, and also that they have a right to govern themselves under the law. And so Penn, once again, before he even sets foot in Pennsylvania, writes this constitution, if you will. He called it the Framework of Privileges for the Colony of Pennsylvania. And it's amazing. It's utterly amazing in how far ahead the thinking he had. Because, you know, this is – this is, you know, long before the Patriot Movement in America, long before a revolution. You know, this is back when you know, the King of England was, you know, was the reigning monarch. A lot of the colonies were royal mm-hmm. colonies. He sets up a representative government that looks amazingly like our American government today. It was tripartite. He was the governor. There was a house of 72 legislators that were elected, but then there was also another house of larger, a larger house, 500, representing a greater proportion of the people, just like we have the Senate and we have the House of Representatives.
Oh,
and this
amazing.
Was part of his thing. And they would vote. They would write laws and vote upon them with him having, as governor, final veto power, very similar to a president. You know, way ahead of his time. Something else, of course, one of the greatest highlights is William Penn's number one law, and that was Pennsylvania tolerance of all races of people and all religions, that they were allowed to live side by side, not be molested or persecuted in any way, shape, or form.
Kind of like what he had seen there in Holland, huh?
Exactly.
Okay.
Something else that that is very much a part of our American life today is he started what was known as one of the most humane penal codes in the entire world. In England, you could get the death penalty for a whole myriad of crimes, but basically any crime that was above in monetary value 1 shilling, you were eligible for the death penalty. Yes, they kill people for all sorts of reasons over there. Penn, in his colony, only allowed for treason and murder, or the only two capital crimes. But he did something else, and that was he formed what was called the penitentiary. And I don't think he named it after himself. It comes from the word penitence.
Yeah.
But the idea was, and this happened very first in Pennsylvania, was the whole idea that by bringing the gospel and religious workers into the prison, we will not only punish people who have broken the law, but we will seek to reform them. And so Pennsylvania was actually, as far as dealing with the problem that all countries have of lawbreakers, of prisons, they begin the system of penitentiary, which, of course, is something that is very much in our value system, for better or for worse. I'm not saying we do it well. I'm just saying that that idea of not just locking someone up and punishing them, but actually trying to see if we can get something good to come of them. That whole notion really does come from William Penn and the colony of Pennsylvania. Indian rights. That was another thing that William Penn had. This is something that is mind-boggling, but, you know, all the colonies that were granted by the King of England in the United States all basically gave all the colonists the right to run all the Indians off the land. They knew that they were living there, and they, you know, and they got the charter, and basically they had the complete freedom to get rid of the Indian problem in one way or another. It's ours now. And there was all sorts of Indian wars. There were all sorts of problems. And the king actually gave that kind of charter to William Penn as well. But William Penn, because of the fact of his conscience, absolutely refused to do that to the Indians. And he personally took the time to learn their languages and went to go and negotiate. If he ever needed land for expansion, he would negotiate. He would learn their language, come unarmed without bodyguards, and would go and buy the land from them. And Voltaire, the Enlightenment philosopher, he made a note that really the only treaty made between Indians and Englishmen in the colonies that was ever kept was kept in Pennsylvania. I mean, he saw that they were the only ones. I mean, even the Puritan fathers, all these people were very much,
y'all,
you know, violated.
Now.
Yeah.
This is our land.
We're in charge there. equality for women in the Constitution of Pennsylvania. Women had equal rights as men in all aspects of life. And finally, education, public education. He made that the law of the land in his colony, that there would be public education in all places for all the kids.
Well, we ought to put this guy on a coin or something.
You'd think Pennsylvania, when we think of America as being quote unquote a melting pot, the true melting pot of America was Pennsylvania. During his lifetime, they had immigrants flooding from all over Europe, from different countries, from different religions, to where Pennsylvania was actually the most populous of all the colonies. By the time of the Revolution, there were 300,000 people living in Pennsylvania, which was a massive population. Philadelphia had 18,000 citizens, which that, once again, is a massive, massive metropolitan city for that particular time era. And it was the center, really, of culture, of learning, of commerce. It was truly, though, the melting pot of all people. And it's kind of an interesting thing, though. You know, William Penn, as I mentioned before, he had a home over here, but he never really lived here. And his brilliance was also, unfortunately, matched by his lack of talent for money management. And he had people managing things over here for them, actually fellow churchmen, who mismanaged and bilked him and embezzled a lot of money from him. And so Penn was still remaining in England fighting religious battle or legal battles for religious freedom and reading and signing papers. And he ended up signing one paper that actually turned Pennsylvania over to his money manager. And he actually had to go to court when he found out what happened and fight for that. And in essence, what happened was is that he won the court battle, but all this had just taken a complete toll on him in the later years of his life. And he ended up dying penniless and ended up having a couple strokes. And just he just died. But one of the things, Pat, I want to say that this is really amazing. One of the very last things, Penn was a very prolific writer. One of the last things he wrote was a plan for the present and future peace of Europe. And what this was a document, it was an idea, a plan that he set forth in which the nations of Europe would no longer settle their differences by going to war with one another, but instead would negotiate and arbitrate their disagreements. And this very document actually is one of the major influences on the United Nations that we have today, so much so that United Nations Day, when they picked a day to fix what day of the year that would be, they fixed it on William Penn's birthday. Because he saw down the line, and he saw down the line and saw the future. So Penn is a wonderful example for us. He's the only example we have of in our history of fair dealing with the First Nations of the Indian people. One of the greatest influences probably on our American Constitution and civil liberties. Thomas Jefferson called William Penn the greatest lawgiver who's ever lived on the planet. And he is also most notably the witness to the world on the blessings of religious liberty and something you and I even enjoy today without fear because of people like William Penn. And so somebody that we all need to be thankful to God for in our family history.
Well, I'm so pleased to know about that, and I'm slightly embarrassed being a Marylander myself, just one state to the south, that, of course, we knew or heard William Penn, one of the figures that you study in history, you know, in fourth grade, but I didn't know all of that. That's so remarkable. And so he died in England penniless. What year was that?
It was 1744.
1744.
So even kind of during the Great Awakening that was happening over here, he was in England fighting for religious liberty. And anyway, so.
Well, Matt, Chris, that's wonderful. Gosh, thanks for bringing us the story today on William Penn. Here on KDEV, it's 34 minutes after 12 o'clock, and this is the date every Thursday, final Thursday of the month, you know, we do these church history hits. Chris White here today on his own will forgive Matt for being on vacation. It is well-deserved, although he's usually here as well. So, you know, it's fun to get that glimpse at one of our heroes.
That's
right. Not only a national hero, but a spiritual hero as
That's
well,
right.
You know? And we'll get back here to some music, and I want to let you know that this is day number three of our fun drive. We have, our goal today is to build Studio B. What's that? Well, you know, it's a real studio with walls and windows and a microphone and a little console in it and some speakers and that kind of thing. We can actually do production. And so if you came and visited our studios now, you would see that there's this big room, And over in this area right here, we have a bunch of sound equipment and a microphone. There's really no way to isolate yourself from any of the ambient sound that's going on. That's it. We really need a studio today. And so piece by piece, you guys have been building that studio for us today. We've already had the EAS receiver. Thank you so much for that. We've had the music library, you know, for music beds, production music, and that sort of thing. You got us a server. Thank you so much. A couple of RE20 microphones, the kind that I'm speaking into right now. And you got the amp for the speakers for us. Yeah, this is great. And now we're working on the Unity receiver. So we're just kind of doing this piece by piece, and hopefully by the end of the day, we'll be able to do the actual carpentry, you know, the build-out, which is going to be another $3,000. But this item is $800, and we've already had, Chris, $50 promised for that. That's terrific. And now, obviously, we need a remainder.
Now you guys are going to get some real carpenters to do this. You're not going to do a jerry-built studio, are you?
No, we're going to get actually someone that knows how to hammer and nail and, you know, put up walls and fill in the insulation, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, we won't get Jerry to do it.
Good. That's probably a good thing.
And we'll try to keep Perry's hand out of it, too. So, yeah, there we go. Just piece by piece. Right now we're at $750 to go on this Unity satellite receiver, a very necessary piece of equipment. We do have one that is run by a computer that, well, all right, it didn't come over on the Mayflower, but maybe the monitor and the
Merrimack. Or maybe on a Conestoga wagon.
Yeah.